recording has started.
Awesome. Thank you so much. The tech folks just indicate to me that the recording has been restarted. This is Thomas Rickert speaking, and welcome again to our plenary session on occasion of the ICANN 62 meeting in Panama. We had a couple of items that we wanted to close on. Jordan has kindly sent the revised language for the ombuds panel to the list. So let me check whether there are any further interventions that you want to make or any further comments. Just checking, Bernie, did we receive any response on the list to Jordan's email? Okay, then I think we can tick that off the list. So thanks, everyone, for the great discussion on that. And it looks like we found a solution that is workable for everyone. The other point that we need to discuss is the open contracting part again. And at least from here, it was our understanding that there is a general understanding by the plenary that an implementation guideline is required in order to lower the administrative burden for the ICANN organization in determining thresholds and applicable contractual relationships where disclosure needs to be made. But we also understand that there are issues that are seen by the group. Jay made a comment that resonated well with many in the group. Robin has made an intervention as well as many others. So what has happened in the meantime is we have asked Bernie to include two parameters in the revised language for the open contracting recommendation. The first aspect would be to lower the threshold from 500 to 250K. And the second point would be to make adjustments to the threshold subject to AD revisions so that it's not a carved in stone threshold, but we need to look at the practicality. So if ICANN's annual budget shrinks, then there might be an adjustment to the one side. If it increases, it might change to the other side, because I think we are in agreement that we do not want ICANN to spend too many of its resources on managing the open contracting part. So we haven't heard back from ICANN. I have reached out to Krista Spain, who's been in discussion with us on this, and I've asked him for an indication of how many contractual relationships we're talking about, i.e. what the administrative burden for fulfilling this requirement would be. And I hope to be able to get back to you with a response within the next hour or so. But for the time being, unless we hear that it's hundreds of contractual relationships, I think this is a compromise that we should probably go for. At least I would personally recommend that we do that. Seems to be good middle ground, preserving the spirit of the recommendation, yet making the operationalization of it easier for the ICANN organization. And I will also say this, it will make it more difficult for ICANN to say that there are global public interest considerations to refuse or reject the recommendation. Is there any opposition to this suggestion? Or I see Steve Sanders up, so Steve, please go ahead.
Thank you, Steve Del Bianco. I agree with the language and yet wonder if we can add a signal to the board that we fully understand where the burden lies in the register, the annual publication of the register. And given that, if the board were to respond opposing $250,000 threshold, we would expect their opposition to include data sufficient for us to appreciate why that number, our threshold, is too low. I've written accounting systems, I'm an accountant, and I realize the accounts payable system that ICANN uses has a simple reporting query. It says that over the last 12 months, give me a list of vendors who have received more than $250,000. I don't need the names, by the way, I just need the quantity, how many are in it. And if ICANN comes back and says that the 250K threshold, we have over 1,000 records or several hundred records, then I gather that that is extremely difficult for an ICANN auditor to go through each and every one of those to determine whether there are confidentiality provisions in that vendor relationship to prevent the disclosure in the register. That is the burden. There is no burden to running the report. The burden is to screen the report and to publish it. So we are sensitive to the burdens, and I want the record to reflect we understand it. This isn't some fight over what the numbers should be at the World Bank and what other people at this table say. We are appreciative of the burdens, but we can only be responsive to the board if it shares with us their knowledge of what the burden is. It is insufficient to simply claim we can't do it at 100K. We can do it at 500, because we're coming back at 250, and the answer we need back has to be a substantive answer, not just a yes or a no.
Thanks, Steve. That makes an awful lot of sense, and I see Bernie nodding, so I understand that Bernie is keeping track of what you were saying. Let me suggest this. If we get green light from Chris that the 250K is accepted, we don't need to make that addition. Shouldn't we get any or a different response, we should put this into the rationale for the recommendation. I see Robin nodding as well. I want to put that on the record because, no, to be quite honest, I think, and this is the part where I feel slightly uncomfortable with the way that we're dealing with this, is what we are adding into the language of our report needs to come from this group wholeheartedly, right? So we were, and I hope that we've framed this in a way that everyone agrees with, that we hear that we haven't framed or we haven't used language sufficiently clear to convey the spirit of what we're trying to say. And we want to preserve that spirit, yet remove the ambiguity or the issues that third parties might have reading it. And therefore, this is our amendment. It's not something that's dumped on us, and this is why we should feel comfortable with whatever additional language we put in here. I see Cavusa's hand, and then we go to Jay.
Yes, thank you very much. I fully and wholeheartedly support what Steve mentioned. However, I also agree with what you said. Nevertheless, we should add something in the record or somewhere that this reduction from 500,000 to 250,000 is as a result of considerable discussions and proposals, and this represents a consensus. So we should not leave that board is freedom to make any changes. I understood that you said that Chris has been given, whether he discussed with board or whether as the vice chair of the board said that, but we would like to maintain this 250. If there is anything, we don't mention that this should be argument for the time being. We should just mention that this is a consensus built, and this we need to maintain that. Thank you.
So if I understand you correctly, we should confirm that the implementation guidelines have consensus within this group, right? So that's easily done. Thank you for that. Jay.
Thank you. This is Jay Daly again, speaking again in a personal capacity with the same declaration as before. I'm not a member of the working group, so I don't expect to have any standing in this, but I do not agree with Steve. I do not understand why we need to deviate from commonly accepted standards about open contracting that exist in other organisations. I do not understand what is special about ICANN that it cannot simply fit to a particular model. The number of people affected or the number of contractors to be disclosed, in my mind, is irrelevant. You know, the number comes from the limit you set. You don't set the limit because of the number. That's nonsense. So I would much prefer that we asked ICANN a specific reason why they cannot set a standard using an external standard. What is so different about them, and then assess that answer, because I don't think there would necessarily be any really good reason for that. Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. Your point is well heard. I think we are trying to understand exactly that with the question that I put to Chris and say, okay, should there be any issues, you need to feed us with numbers. So we, at the moment, we don't have any understanding of what the overall volume for individual contractors or individual contracts is. So we're pretty much digging in the dark. And therefore, if this group feels comfortable with the 250K threshold, I think that's also due to the fact that unlike governments or unlike intergovernmental organizations, there are different budget constraints that we have to work under. And in our, I think, iterative process of improving ICANN's accountability, we can use that as a number to start with and then adjust as we move on, right? And that's the idea. But everyone in the room heard your intervention. So should there be a requirement to adjust the figure any further, please do make yourself heard. I see Greg's hand is up. Greg, where are you? Ah, over there.
Thank you, Greg Shatton, for the record. I support the language that has been proposed here. And with regard to external standards, I note that the external standards that have been cited so far are those for governmental and multilateral organizations, and ICANN specifically noted in their intervention that they asked for relevant external standards that may apply to private sector organizations, and they were given responses like things that were intended to deal with pervasive corruption in the Ukrainian government or Ukrainian economy and other kind of edge cases. And in my few minutes attempting to do research on the internet, I didn't find any good discussion of external standards for private sector organizations. So at some point in time, maybe we can, you know, look at that issue appropriately, but that is a, at this point, it's more of a rabbit hole than a concern, I think, and if somebody wants to make the case that for an organization like ICANN, whatever that may mean, that there is a private sector standard. I think the idea that we're following the same standards as governments and for the for the same reasons as governments did not stand. So we should move on from that. So the question is, and until there are external standards that we can actually look at, a pragmatic standard makes the most sense, and it's pragmatic not to overly burden ICANN and to do something that is worthwhile and that will be reviewed from time to time. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Greg. I see Cavus's hand is up again.
Sorry, the reduction from 500,000 to 50 does not mean that the argument against or in favor of 100 or 500 is right and wrong. The issue is that we need to have a middle ground that everybody could live with that, and that is 250,000. But individual views could be recorded in the outcome of this meeting. No, no problem about that. Doesn't mean that they are right or they are wrong. The problem is that we have to have this agreement, and we think that this consensus is emerged, and then these 250 need to be considered for the time being as this one subject to the review by the board, taking into account of the ADRT. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. That's a good point. Let me go back to Jay for a moment. Jay, talking about external standards, are you aware of any such standards outside the intergovernmental organizations or the government realm?
Right. No, and but I think that asking that is deliberately muddying the waters here. I don't think it's appropriate that we look for a standard that is specifically to the type of organisation that ICANN is. I think the government standards apply very well to us in this regard. However, I am comfortable with 250,000. It is much closer to a reasonable target.
So, thanks for all your comments. I just got feedback that there is no way for us to get information on the different tiers of contracts today. So the Chris's suggestion is to leave it at 500 and then work lower through ATRT. From what I hear from this group is that the 500 doesn't fly within this community, right? So my suggestion would be to leave it at the 250, to add a rationale to our report, as indicated by Steve. We should, just summarizing things quickly, we should say that we understand the board's concern based on the global public interest in a way that not too many resources should be bound by analyzing contractual relationships, that we, that the CCWG acknowledges this, that therefore we made revisions by way of implementation guidelines, as we discussed, reducing the threshold to 250 total volume in an individual contractual relationship, you know, vendor IANT relation, you know, not individual order or contract, but contractual relationship, and having that adjusted by ATRT as needed. And that we think that by lowering the threshold that way, the global public interest concerns are sufficiently reduced, because we think that, you know, not knowing the numbers, that there will not be too many contractual relationships that need to be disclosed, and that the burden of analyzing the contract is not too high. So let's put that in writing. Let's also inform the board as soon as we can about this. And should they be able to substantiate their concerns with more data, we can talk, right? But for the time being, let's seal it. Any objections to proceeding as I outlined? I don't see any. There are no hands raised in the chat. So 3-2-1, sold. Awesome. Two down. Two more to go. One to go. Great. So shall I continue to go through that? So the next point would be 5.4. That's government relation, government engagement. And as usual, I'd like Bernie to give us a quick overview.
Thank you. All right. We'll walk our way through this one similarly to the open contracting one. In the interest of providing community greater clarity with regard to how ICANN engages government stakeholders, the numbers you see spread out there are referred to footnotes, which you can see in the original document. And to ensure that ICANN community and, if necessary, the empowered community is fully aware of ICANN's interaction with governments, the CCWG accountability recommends ICANN begin disclosing publicly the following, notwithstanding any contractual confidentiality provisions, on at least a yearly but no more quarterly basis with regard to expenditures over $20,000 per year devoted to political activities both in the U.S. and abroad. Excuse me. Next slide, please. So the detail that recommendation carried on to include all expenditures on an itemized basis by ICANN, both for outside contractors and inside personnel, all identities of those engaging in such activities, both internal and external, on behalf of ICANN, the types of engagement used for such activities, meaning in types of contracts, to whom the engagement and supporting materials are targeted, and the topics discussed with relative specificity. Next slide, please. This implementation advice posted Wednesday, 20 June, was edited versus what was posted Tuesday, 12 June. This version has been agreed to by the co-chairs, would be acceptable to ICANN. This version is not supported by the rapporteur, which is Michael, as he mentioned in his previous statement. In considering all aspects of this issue, the co-chairs recommend this implementation guidance to the plenary. Next slide, please. Now, this one is a little long, so please bear with me. There were a number of concerns from the ICANN side for a variety of different reasons. This recommendation needs to be consistent with DIDP exceptions, specifically the exception which states, information provided by or to a government or international organization or any form of recitation of such information in the expectation that the information will be kept confidential and or would materially prejudice ICANN's relationship with that party. Note, the Workstream 2 transparency recommendations for DIDP did not mention or modify this exception, which is currently included in the DIDP, and as such, it would be expected to stand. So this is currently in the DITP, and the transparency group did not suggest any modifications to this, so it stands. Next slide, please. Thank you. Overall, one must recognize that ICANN is a critical actor in the DNS and has significant expertise in the area. ICANN's corporate objectives include a number of activities and programs to share this expertise with all interested parties, including governments. As such, any activities where ICANN is presenting information which is publicly available or which is part of formally published ICANN position on a subject through training programs, conferences, or individual meetings should not be required to be disclosed beyond the reports which are currently published by ICANN and reports regarding bilateral conversations with governments. ICANN currently publishes a lot of information relative to that. Next slide, please. And the note points one of these sources out. Reporting on bilateral conversations can be found in the ICANN quarterly reports. Additional information on specifics of these reports can be requested via the DITP subject to the stated exceptions. An example of such a report can be found at. So please have a look, page 29. You will see the amount of detail that is provided. To further facilitate the community's understanding of ICANN's objectives in discussions with governments, it should publish an annual government engagement strategy, which should describe the focus of its interactions with governments for the coming year. The document should be derived from existing documentation, including but not limited to annual planning CEO reports to the board and correspondence with the GAC. So basically, there is a lot of information that is published. We're suggesting some new information be published as to strategies so it can go further. When considering the discussions with ICANN on this, we've just finished having a debate about 500,000 versus 250,000, and we understand the pushback from ICANN. You can imagine the pushback on 20,000. If it has to include staff, I mean, basically trying to calculate this would imply creating a parallel accounting system, if you will, to a certain extent. So there was a great deal of concern that in this case it was unquestionably a significant burden would be placed on ICANN to limited value additional information. In discussions with various people, you know, people want to know who ICANN is talking to, generally what they're talking about, but, you know, if it was a contractor or if it was a staffer that spent an hour or two or 20 hours in a year talking to someone, does it really make sense? Now, Michael really did not agree with this, and I don't think he's online, so to do justice to him, he felt that the $20,000 threshold was high enough so that most of the things would not matter. When Steve and I met with him to discuss this, we explained the incredible burden that the $20,000 level would involve, especially if you're including staff. But for him, there was just no going around that. So basically, we went ahead with this implementation guidance and suggesting it to you, even without Michael's support for it. Did I get that right, Steve?
If I may be called upon, I'd like to address both of them. As an advocate for Michael's position, having listened to it and read his email no fewer than 10 times, and I think Michael would be quite pleased where we ended up on the open contracting number, significantly better than the 500. And I don't know for sure, can't speak for Michael except to suggest this. If you read Michael's email where he expressed his personal, the rapporteur's, disagreement with respect to the first thing you brought up, it had to do with the DIDP today allows ICANN to exclude the publication of the content of its conversations with governments. Read Michael's email. He took no issue with that. In fact, he's not asking now at some late date to change that. He thinks it's completely appropriate. He clarified to say that the recommendations of the transparency team never even called for that. They only called for the theme of the conversation, which could be things like we talked about internet governance, we talked about censorship or some sort of general theme. So Michael's main concern, read his email carefully, is that by us citing existing and unchallenged DIDP policy in implementation guidance, his belief is that we give it greater weight than it has today. I have a hard time understanding how that would be the case if implementation guidance results in no change to policy, no change to bylaws. But if, speaking for what I think Michael would say, let's find some way to put belts and suspenders on that paragraph to indicate that as already provided under ICANN policies and procedures, or clarify that this implementation guidance does not suggest any change in policy. And again, I'm speaking to the paragraph that he had concern about. He had asked to delete the paragraph, which is the paragraph that starts with information provided by or to a government. His suggestion was to delete the paragraph. If that paragraph is deemed essential by ICANN, then we split the difference by adding a qualifier to that paragraph, indicating that citation of that policy gives it no greater applicability to the activities in the recommendation. So that would be what I would suggest with respect to Michael's first. The second one gets to this notion of the dollar disclosure. We did some work on this call with Michael by diving into these quarterly disclosures that the CEO publishes. Each quarter, they put out a PowerPoint deck, and in there, you might find it on slide 29, for instance, if you looked at the March quarter ended, is a list of governments with whom ICANN had bilateral conversations, bilateral interaction, not necessarily a meeting, so it's a general thing. And it's not even conversations that were over $20,000 in costs. It's all conversations. Now, what is revealed is the fact that ICANN met with the governments of, and if you look on page 29, there's several governments listed. That is sufficient for any of us in the community who are curious to immediately file a DIDP request to learn more about the nature of that interaction, such as who, how, and what was said. When that happens, ICANN would use their own DIDP policy to exclude the revelation, the disclosure of things that they felt violated the existing policy. And Michael understands that. I understand that as well. But we as a community can't even ask ICANN, what did you say in your conversations with X government in March? We can't even ask if we don't know that they had the conversation. We are getting better information in these quarterly lists of government interaction than we would with a policy based on dollars of expenditure. Let me suggest that we don't want to use dollars as a threshold when we can learn even more by the continued practice of quarterly disclosure of ICANN.org conversations with governments, conversations that are bilateral as opposed to sort of in an open meeting in front of multiple governments. So I do think that the recitation of the note there, that reporting on bilateral conversations can be found in the ICANN quarterly reports, and then additional information on specifics in the report can be requested at any time via the DIDP, subject to the stated exemptions. And we put a paragraph in there. So I believe we have done better than a $20,000 threshold with the revelation that they will stick to, that they, ICANN.org, will stick to quarterly disclosure of bilateral conversations with whom they were having, as opposed to the content in detail. Bernie, that was a long answer, but you asked, and I'm trying to do my best to summarize where we are and where we are now. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Any further comments on that? So, Steve, I think it paid off that you read his email 10 times. No, I mean, that was a great explanation on how we can proceed with this. So, are we clear on the... Oh, David's hand is raised. David, please.
Thanks, Thomas. David McCauley for the record. I think I have a question about where you were just going, and that is, for much of this, I take it that you all are in contact with members of the board about, is this acceptable? And I'm not sure I followed all of what Steve just said, but if we're making a change here to go with the Michael version and not what the board's implementation was, the question would be, is that okay with the board? I don't know that, I mean, I think we're still in the place where we came to this, if I'm not mistaken. Thank you.
Steve?
To clarify, thank you, David. Steve Del Bianco. I was not suggesting we make any change to the text that was circulated by Bernie, because I believe that Michael's objections, in the second case, I believe he misunderstands that we have more information than a 20K threshold. With respect to his first one, I personally don't see how the inclusion of the DIDP language gives it greater weight in the world. But out of an abundance of deference to Michael, I was suggesting a single sentence be added where we indicated that this implementation guidance cites existing DIDP policy and as such does nothing to extend its applicability. That sentence added under the paragraph is, I believe, a better answer than deleting a paragraph that the board seems insistent that we put in there for purposes of transparency.
Okay, so you're suggesting we add that one sentence to the existing language? So just to be clear, the board was fully supportive of the implementation guideline that we provided. That remains unaltered. We will add the sentence as suggested by Steve, and we will let Michael know, and if staff could take note of that, we will let Michael know that his concerns were discussed, point him to the transcript to see Steve's response, and then I think we're done, aren't we? Any further comments on that point? David.
Thank you, Thomas. David McCauley again for the record. I just wanted to say what Steve just said made it clearer for me, and I can support that. Thank you.
That's great. So the sentences in the chat, let me read it out for those who are not in front of their computers. The above discussion of the DIDP policies is by way of explanation and does not expand the application of this policy to other ICANN activities. So let's see whether there are further interventions. Malcolm, I see your hand is raised. Please.
Yes, I'm not sure about what's meant by two other ICANN activities there. Would it not be simpler and clearer just to say the above discussion of DID policies is by way of explanation and does not expand the application of this policy?
That's fine.
Can you post it, Malcolm, so we're sure to get it properly posted?
So the last four words of Steve's suggested sentence will be deleted. Malcolm is going to type that into the chat. The above discussion of DIDP policies is by way of explanation and does not expand the application of this policy. Any further comments on that? Steve, your hand is raised again.
Thank you. It's only to make sure this has been confusing for people. This is why I believe this is responsive to Michael, the rapporteur. In Michael's email to all of you, this particular language, with which he has no problem at all, his objection was the inclusion of the language in our implementation guidance. And what he said was, quote, the language is not only inappropriate to have in this context, but it could open the door to a significant regression in ICANN's DIDP system. This notion that simply disclosing this policy might be an invitation for ICANN to expand it. So rather than delete the entire paragraph, which has been, in my mind, an exercise in transparency, we should qualify that we disclosed it only for purposes of understanding it and not to allow its expansion. That is why I believe we are being, in a good faith, responsive to Michael's concerns. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Steve. So the queue is clear. Any objections to this implementation guideline? 3, 2, 1. We're good. Thanks. So that allows us to move to the remaining agenda items, but those should be less contentious than what we've discussed already. So So over to you, Jordan.
Thanks, Thomas. And we'll come back at the end of the meeting to outline what the next steps are with all the stuff we've just worked through in terms of implementation guidance. The next agenda item is item 7, I think, and that's called, can you show me the slide?
AOB?
There's a couple of items under AOB. One that you want to think about, if you've got any AOB, let me know. But the first is the IRP IoT public consultation. A call for comments went out on the 22nd of June. And so, David, are you going to be briefing us on that?
I can certainly mention it if you'd like. And Bernie's and Malcolm and others are well aware of this too. But the IRP implementation oversight team has been working on taking into account public comments that were rendered to the first set of draft supplementary procedures that we had issued for the new IRP. When I say new IRP, I mean the IRP as established or as constituted under the IANA transition bylaws, the new bylaws that we operate under now. Anybody that wants to know about IRP, go to bylaw section 4.3, top to bottom, read it, and you'll get it. But in any event, we're working on rules, and amongst the public comments were a number of criticisms of our first rule that said a claim had to be filed within a certain period of time, 45 days from someone becoming aware of the harm, but in no event more than 1 year from the date of ICANN's action, and there was public comment about it. We've struggled to come to some sort of an accommodation, and we've just released a new draft for public comment. It's a radical change from what we did initially. In other words, right now the new rule says claim has to be filed within 120 days, someone becoming aware of the harm that they suffered, and there's no overall cap. And so that's the rule. I would suggest that people go and look at it and also mention to others that this new request for public comment is out there. It was issued by ICANN Friday evening, June the 22nd. Close date is August the 10th. It's important that people take a look and comment if they feel it's warranted, pro, con, indifferent, whatever, but comments are welcome. And we will continue our work. We're getting close to issuing interim rules for IRP process, and that would be my rough summary, but I would invite Bernie or anyone from the team to make additional comment if they wish.
Thanks. Bernie, go ahead.
Just to add on to that, I'm the practical guy. This public consultation actually fits on a couple of pages. It's not a challenge to understand. It's not overly legalistic. The concepts are rather clear, so it should be fairly easy for anyone to understand what is being asked and to put in an opinion on it, because the questions are put forward rather clearly. So don't be put off that this is a huge legal text. It really isn't. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernie. Are there any other comments on that topic? Malcolm.
I thought I could briefly summarize what the real the substance of the issue is that's being consulted upon here. This is a consultation about the time that you have for filing an IRP case. But the point of contention is not really about the time that should be allowed, but when the clock should start running. Under the previously proposed draft, the clock would start running when ICANN took a decision. But you should remember that in the IRP, you only have the right to bring an IRP case if you have been materially affected yourself. Under the new proposal, we are suggesting that the clock starts running when you are affected. The difference here makes a significant difference for those cases when ICANN takes a decision and then takes a long time before actually it ends up affecting anyone. In many of our most contentious areas, ICANN could take a decision in principle as to a policy or something like that, and then it takes years before it ever gets implemented. Under that, you couldn't challenge the original decision if the time has run out before you were ever affected in the first place. So the new proposal is that the clock starts running when you are actually affected, or when you reasonably ought to have known that you were affected by the decision. That's the nature of the change. Without that, there is a real risk that particularly for the areas that are most contentious, as to, for example, whether or not something is within the realms of what ICANN is allowed to engage in, that nobody would have the opportunity ever to bring an IRP case so as to challenge the appropriateness of that. This rule, as with any normal sort of legal or other administrative claim, says that the person must act promptly as soon as they have the right to bring a claim. But it doesn't cut off the time before they have the right to bring a claim. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Malcolm, for that sort of teasing out of what the issue actually is. If there are no other AOB items at this point, we'll flick on to item 8, which I think is the next slide and is the path forward, which is his suggestion is the path forward. So I'm going to hand that back to Thomas to introduce this item.
Thanks very much, Jordan. Now, we've put 3 bullet points on this slide. The first point is within our control. So our excellent Bernie, I'm saying we, I mean Bernie. Bernie is going to do the last amendments of our final work product, including the changes or the implementation guideline that we've discussed today. And then we will send that to the chartering organizations, and we will also send it to the board. And with respect to next steps, I promise to get back on Bob the Builder. We can do that. And Steve's suggestion, not to give up on the idea of getting approval during this meeting. The question is, how can we best facilitate that? Because when I spoke to the GNSO Council a couple of months back, they said they wanted to see the final work product as soon as possible, at least 3 weeks before we convene in Panama. And my question to you is, can we pull this off? Do we feel comfortable in potentially putting together a small slide deck with the last revisions and just tell everyone that everything else remained unchanged and they will then say yes? Or do the members, I'm looking particularly at the members representing the various chartering organizations, or would that be a futile exercise and you say, well, my folks are not going to buy that by any stretch, right? So let's hear some views. I, to be quite honest, do not know whether the GNSO would approve this week, given they haven't received the report yet. So, Bernie, and then we go to Alan and Cavus.
It has been a standard process for things to be considered by various SOs and ACs at ICANN for years to give a minimum of 3 weeks' notice of documents. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. Alan.
Well, to start with what he said, I would certainly have trouble going to the ALAC and saying, with documents I can't even present to you today, I expect to have an answer from the ALAC and whether we support it. You know, our meetings are pretty well fully booked right now. I can't expect someone to do a lot of homework this week. So I think it would be a bit much to ask us. On top of that, I think it's really important to understand if the board still has any objections at this point. You know, we make our own decision, but if we know what we're approving is going to end up with a confrontation, I think we may treat it differently. So I would really like to understand that the board is giving at least informal nod to what we're presenting, and we need time for our members to consider. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. I'm not sure we can get that approval or that green light during this meeting even, but we can ask.
That's another reason why getting approval from my committee would be, I don't think, is possible this week.
Question is whether you want to wait for the board's permission to sign off on the report, but that would be a different discussion. Cavus, please.
Yes, thank you. In principle, I support Alan's positions. The second, why we should have different course of action than we had previously with respect to the views or comments or approval of anything, and perhaps we should not hurry, and it is difficult that you ask the people to reply on something on the spot, so we need to have more time, we need to digest the matter, in particular some of the ACs need more time because they are more active when they are in sessions and they have to be informed before to take into account the material and be prepared to reply to that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. Benedicto?
Thank you, Thomas. Well, in response to your question, I would agree it would be not realistic to expect to have a final decision by the end of the week. We have come to this meeting with a set agenda. The document is being, with the last adjustment, finalized today. We need some time to go through it, to work with colleagues. So I think it might be worthwhile to think about an early start of this, but certainly it would not be feasible to achieve it by the end of the week. Thank you.
Thanks, Benedicto. Sebastian?
Thank you. Sebastian Machere speaking. I think it's important to have the feedback of the board of what to have done. It's not to have the authorization of them that we can sign the document, but as it was a conversation, an exchange you had with them before this meeting, if they say no way, we can't agree with one of the recommendations you are putting to us, and we need to make some additional work, maybe to say no, but we need at least to know. The second point is that as Cheryl just writes, and I think if we can have a deck, it will be useful. But I would like to be sure that we include in this deck what are the next steps, and not just the next step here to have the final document and the agreement by the chartering organization and by the board, but how we, I can, in general, will deal with the implementation of this and who will be doing what. I think it's important to have that also in this deck if it's possible. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sebastian. Steve?
Steve Del Bianco. Alan, hang on one second before you step out of the room because I wanted to pitch this to you as well. Bob the Builder left the room too soon because we delivered what we aspired to do this morning, albeit that the board may or may not decide to challenge 250K. Everything else should be fine with the board. And I'm fine if they're not fine with 250K, provided they have to explain why. So we did what Bob the Builder asked us to do, and now because of the difficulty of scheduling and presenting and getting decisions, we're about to lose that momentum. So I would ask us to have a PowerPoint ready to go. For all I know, Bernie's already done it, a PowerPoint describing the Workstream 2 recommendations and implementation guidelines, and can't be too long, and that we offer that along with the report to the ACNSO chairs in an offer to come and present, if they wish, while we are gathered here. And the offer to present does not imply the obligation to approve, and yet we can't miss the opportunity to use the momentum and the presence of people at this meeting. So, Bernie, can you get a PowerPoint together to present Workstream 2 recommendations in time to present this week?
It's going to be ready about midday tomorrow, so that's sure. I'm trying to make sure that we have a full package before the end of business tomorrow, let's say, just to make sure I'm not lying to anyone here. I also want to remind everyone that there's a high-interest topic session on Wednesday where we're scheduled to present all of this to everyone, and that, you know, I think is a great opportunity. We had scheduled it for another reason originally, but now it has become much more of a high interest topic. So I think we will be ready one way or another starting Tuesday morning to give presentations to anyone who wants them.
Thank you. And have we already scheduled time with any ACNSOs that are chartering?
The CCNSO has asked for a presentation, and we will be giving that.
So thank you. Let's do our best to offer, either at the general high-interest topic or in specific sessions, let's offer to answer questions and walk through the recommendations in an effort to encourage the chartering orgs to consider approval at the earliest opportunity. Thank you.
Jordan.
Yeah, can I just add to that? I don't want to be alarmist, but this group's timing, funding, et cetera, runs out at the end of next week. So I would have thought that all of the co-chairs would have organized time at their SOs and ACs to consider these recommendations like I did, because this is the end of the road for us. So, you know, I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm not coming back to do any work on this in October. And so if SOs and ACs are not going to approve the proposals at this meeting, they need to use this meeting to get the input, get the discussion going, understand the proposals, tease out any other issues, so that that can be worked on, I guess, intersessionally on the email list without staff support, because that is the reality of where we are at in this process. So I look forward to seeing the slide pack and as kind of document with the implementation advice being included in the report. But as we all know, and as we've managed to stick to today, the recommendations in the proposal have not changed from what they were in March. And so if SOs and ACs and participants there and are not yet familiar with them, I doubt they ever will be. Thanks.
Bernie? And then we'll go back to the queue.
Just a note that about a month ago, I did send a note to the SO and AC chairs asking if they wanted a presentation while we were in Panama to drop us a note. And we got no replies.
Jordan, I guess that's an old hand, right?
Yeah.
So, Cheryl?
Thank you. Pardon me, Cheryl Langdon, off the record. One question that Alan asked me to raise was, is there any chance of minor time support post 30 June for this work? I just gathered from Jordan that's not the case. Is that correct or am I wrong?
Can I ask you to clarify that? I was a little bit confused by the question.
Alan asked me to ask whether or not, because budget ends June 30, the SOACs coming back with hopefully a supporting point, there's still going to be a minor bit of administration at that time. Is it possible to get some of your hours to see this or not, is his question. And then I'll come back to another point.
I've been told there is I'm funded, as with the other staff here, funded by the MSSI group, and there has been some budget put aside for, quote, implementation. So there is some money there to keep doing some of the mechanical things that need to be done to really get us across the line, I think is the answer you're looking for.
Thank you, Cheryl Langton, off the record again. And yes, that I think is going to be heartening when we discuss this. Regarding the slide deck, and I think you're right, the work on Wednesday is now vital, but I do think, for example, the At-Large Advisory Committee, if I understood what Alan said as he left properly, post this meeting, because it simply wasn't put into our agenda, right? It just did not. Our report wasn't out, therefore it didn't get into our agendas, right? Small amount of time, lots of things to do in it. But post this meeting, there would be an opportunity, for example, the At-Large Advisory Committee, and I suspect the other ACs and SOs, GNSO included, with a 21 days notice, to look at that. Can we also assume that the slide deck and materials that we use, is that going to be enough, or do we need to perhaps hold a webinar where people can clarify thoughts in their minds if they're not actually on the ground here? Not all of our ALAC members, for example, have been able to travel. Just wondering whether or not there's an opportunity to take up a single purpose call, either by AC and SO or in general across.
Uh,
I haven't checked that, but I would imagine that, you know, it's not a huge preparation given the rest we're preparing. So, but what I will say also is we get a fairly good idea after we release a document if it's going to be useful or not. Because often you just come up and say webinar and people say, oh yeah, sure, and you get a half dozen people that are watching soccer while listening to your webinar, and that's not really useful, okay? But if we do get a huge amount of questions after we publish the document, I think obviously we would look at creating such an opportunity under the regular conditions of probably two, so that we hit both major time zones of the Earth.
Just in response, if I may, Cheryl Langdon, off the record again, seems to me that then, therefore, we also need to note here that there is a vital opportunity for the capital M members in this cross-community working group that the ACs and the SOs have appointed, that they may have an important facilitatory and educational role, and that may also assist. I just want to make sure that's noted. Thanks.
So let's proceed with the queue. Kavus.
Thank you, Thomas. I think the way that the SO and AC functions is different from one another to another. In particular, as far as the GAC is concerned, even the webinar would not help. The best position would be that while they are in session, at least some 70 to 80 members they are there, it would be beneficial to present the document either by co-chair or by somebody and opt for some questions and answers and so on and so forth, get them ready, digest, and then at a later stage they reply. They are not prepared to put a question and ask them to rush into yes and no, which both of them, if it is not properly studied, may be dangerous. Maybe opposition without any reason, or maybe approval also without any reason and not be influenced by each other. So therefore, I suggest that we use the opportunity to present the document and to provide clarification, to offer the answer, but not asking a reply. Thank you.
Can I just respond to that? I've been advised by Tom Dale on behalf of the GAC that there is a session on Workstream 2 reports and recommendations in the GAC schedule on Thursday from 11:45 a.m. to 12:15. And so we'll have the presentation by then. We'll have circulated it in advance, and I at least will be there at the GAC to take any questions and maybe do a run-through. So that's the approach that's being taken. The only other thing I'll cheekily add is that I think we need to set an expectation that we don't expect SOs and ACs to defer making decisions about the proposal until the Barcelona meeting in October. If it isn't happening here, it needs to happen intersessionally. We don't want to wait another sort of 4 months.
Thanks very much, Jordan. Julie?
Julie Hammer. I apologize if I've misunderstood something about the process, but I did not think that we had already proposed the final report to the SOs and ACs for their concurrence. I thought what we had done was we had responded where we needed to the public comment period, that the final report on those public comments or the summary was in the process of being delivered, and that once that was finalised, then it would be formally put to the SOs and ACs for their concurrence, and that process in my mind hasn't yet started. So I was somewhat taken aback to hear that there was a thought that we might be getting that a formal agreement from the chartering organisations this week. It certainly hadn't been in my mind that we were at that stage.
Thanks, Julie. And I agree. You know, before we came here, there was no such expectation because we didn't make our own timelines with the implementation guidelines. Fiona.
Fiona Songa, for the record. I think for the purposes of being able to move forward with the different chartering organizations, I'd like to suggest that we still have the presentations with those that we can during this meeting. There are others like the ESO who are not going to meet during this meeting because our process happens outside of ICANN. But we have a conference call on the 4th of July, and maybe we can see about how we target towards making our presentation then. However, let's give the chartering organizations a time frame, 21 days, 30 days, or whatever it is we agree on, within which to have responded so that then we can be able to close and move on to other things. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Fiona. Cavus?
Yes, I don't understand any logic behind 21 days. I think it's still you are rushing on something. Why 21 days? Where 21 days come from? We are not public comment. We are not dealing with the workers stream one. We should have sufficient time to react, to digest and to react. And I don't agree with 20 days time limit because that would be by correspondence, that would be by webinar, that would not be effective. As far as the GACing concerns, is the concern, the most effective way would be when the GAC are in session, and that would be at the next meeting in 63. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Benedicto?
Thank you. Just to agree with Cavus, I think for the GAC it will be already a serious challenge to comply with the Barcelona deadline, which I think is a realistic target, but not before that, in the light of the need to involve, to educate people, to make things well known. I think for an informed decision, not before Barcelona.
Thanks very much. I think what we will do is that the chartering organizations should approve at their earliest convenience. I guess that's the best we can say.
But no later than
ICANN 63. Probably we can have that qualifier in there, yeah, right? So with respect to the confusion surrounding, when the chartering organizations got or didn't get the report when it will be sent. Let me remind you of what Steve said, and I think he was spot on. We will have a meeting scheduled with the CCNSO. We will have our town hall meeting. The co-chairs are there for most of the week. So if you talk to your chartering organizations, please do offer to them that we can come visit you. Jordan, Tijani and I will already be gone by then, but Jordan will present to the GAC on Thursday. So if you have a request for us speaking to your communities, let us know. We will help as good as we can, right? So let's try to use the opportunity while we are here to help inform, remove concerns as much as possible in order to facilitate and expedite the approval process. Jorge, your hand is raised. We haven't heard your voice today through a microphone. Where are you sitting? Over there. Jorge, please.
Hello. Jorge Gans here for the record. And this is a question I put on the chat this morning. And probably and hopefully it's only a theoretical question. But is there any provision being made by this leadership team or by us in case one of the chartering organizations doesn't support the recommendations or doesn't support all the recommendations? So do we have a fallback, a plan B or something?
Well, since I've already quoted from the famous Bob the Builder series, let me now quote from the Blues Brothers. In that case, we will bring the band back together. So I think we just accept for the moment as a fact that we have taken the necessary provisions to oversee the implementation. This group will be formally dissolved by the end of this month or at the end of this meeting. We will reconvene as necessary. But we will have, as co-chairs, as well as with the implementation oversight team, as well as with Bernie, the resources that we will need in order to respond to questions there might be. But, to be quite honest, there shouldn't be too much effort involved with that. We send out the reports. Hopefully the chartering organizations will say yes to it, The board will get it in parallel. The board will hopefully say yes, and then we're on the other side of the fence, let's say, and await any plans for implementation that we can comment on. Is that understanding correct, Bernie?
Maybe not. I don't think the board's going to look at it until DSOs and AACs, our chartering organizations, have looked at it, because their plate is quite full and they don't want to waste their time. So basically there's a process in place. It says SOs and chartering organizations first. Once the chartering organizations go through it, then the board will, then staff will take it on, because if we read the memo that we got 14 May from the board, it says they will want to see at least an initial version of an implementation plan before they consider it. So I would think the sequence is chartering organizations, board to staff for implementation plan, and then staff to board implementation plan and recommendations.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you for that clarification. Jordan?
Can I just add one point? There is, in all of this work, been the expectation of some SOs and ACs about cherry picking, about trying to take the final report and say, yes, we like these recommendations, don't like these other recommendations. I think in those discussions, it's important to keep the context of this stuff in mind. This is, you know, we didn't have cherry picking in the more substantive changes involved with the first work stream of the accountability changes and in the stewardship transition. And this is all leading into a set of ongoing accountability and transparency reviews. So if you're hearing people looking at wishing to cherry pick or wishing to cause the CCWG to be reconvened to rework through the report based on feedback about a sort of set of recommendations that are important but that are subsidiary to the main changes we made in 2016, can I suggest to you that you suggest to them that that probably isn't the best use of anyone's time in the ICANN community? You know, if there are fundamental problems that we need to fix, the expectation set and the request made of all of us who have participated or paid attention to this was that they would be raised in the public comment periods and the extensive rounds of consultation that have already happened. So it's not saying there is absolutely no possibility of future changes. It's just saying, is it worth it?
Go ahead.
Minor correction. It's implementation plan, and I was incorrect. It's staff will produce a feasibility assessment, which will then accompany our recommendations to the board for the board to make a decision.
Okay. Let me just check whether Cavus.
Yes, I think the process is more or less similar to the work stream one, but here the situation is much more difficult because the number of the recommendations are extremely more than that one. In the previous one, for the work stream one, what, for instance, GAC did, they did not go all recommendations in detail. They took two of them, which were sensitive for them, and they expressed their views with respect to these two, pros and cons, with some consent and dissent ideas, and the remaining either they expressed no idea or saying that they have no difficulty. Here, I think for the GAC, for instance, it is important to go through the general aspect of the nine group and saying then for which group of these of nine they are more sensitive for the GAC, and then taking the recommendation of that and try to respond to that. It's a very difficult and very sensitive, and once again, please kindly do not push more than necessary, otherwise there would be some negative reactions. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Well noted. So the queue is clear. Let's then move to the next agenda item, which is going to be the co-chair statement, if I'm not mistaken. So statement is in the making. We will adjust a straw dog, I think is the word you're using today, in order to keep it general neutral. So we will basically reflect what we did today. We will talk about the process of why we are where we are today with the implementation guidelines, in particular that we have resolved for this group the remaining issues, that we will send it formally to the chartering organizations, that this group will disband, Any points that I forgot? I guess those are the most important points that will go into the co-chair statement. We will then subsequently publicize that probably tomorrow. Today is quite unrealistic, and you can use that in order to keep your respective groups informed as well. So with that, I do hope that I will see some of you at the town hall meeting. It will be good to have members of this group here, particularly the rapporteurs, you know, in case there are questions on implementation guidelines and all the things that we did. And I guess we're pretty much at the end of the agenda, aren't we? So, Jordan, do you want to say something? Do you have your hand?
Oh, no, I just leaned forward. I just think we should take a moment to turn around and pat each other or ourselves on the back. This is probably the last full plenary meeting of the CCWG, a process that started after the announcement of the stewardship transition change in 2014. It took close to a year to get ICANN's agreement that accountability improvements would have to happen in keeping in tandem with the transition, not an afterthought to be had. And the outcome of the two work streams of work is an ICANN that is more accountable to the global internet community and one that is more transparent for anyone who's trying to find out about what it is doing. It is not a trivial achievement. It has been a ton of work by many hundreds of people. Those of you in the room here are often the people who've spent the most time and energy on it, though not everyone has hung on since 2014. So I just want to say thank you and well done to everyone who's taken their role in this process.
Well said, Jordan. So I would also like to thank the tech team that's supporting us with all this. So big hands. Our current staff as well as previous staff that has been supporting us. So you will remember Alice's support, Barry's support, Grace's, Ellen's, Natalie, Patrick, Brenda, and certainly Bernie. So let's give them a big round of applause. And those who've been here from the very beginning will remember Mathieu and Leon, who has subsequently moved to the dark side of the empire. So, and also I'd like to make a big shout out to all the rapporteurs who have spent an awful lot of their time in getting the recommendations for the sub-teams done, because the co-chairs had more or less a coordinating role in this phase. So you've done a splendid job in getting us organized and getting substance to the recommendations to improve ICANN's accountability. So big hands for the rapporteurs. Yeah, to all of you. I mean, this group is 230 individuals strong, I guess. I think it has brought the community closer together. It helped break down silos that have historically existed in the ICANN community. And so I think, you know, the existence of this group and the collaborative spirit in which it has worked for such a long time during very tough times, Christmas, Thanksgiving, you know, we worked on basically every public holiday that was available around the world. So that was a great testimony of the dedication of this group. So you guys pulled this off, and therefore you should give yourself a round of applause as well. And my fellow co-chairs, Tijani and Jordan, I've learned a lot from you guys. It was great working with you, with everyone. And with that, I guess we can adjourn the meeting. Thanks so much.
And nobody talk about the third co-chair. You were talking, but nobody thanks you. You need to be thanks as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sebastian.
Because you are the one who are still here from the beginning. You are still surviving, not going to the dark side of the moon. Thank you.
Thank you.